Do you regard black magic as being purely fictitious, or is there some truth in it?
Some truth? 100% truth. There is nothing fictitious about black magic, in any way whatever. It is a fact. It is a fact which has existed for several thousand years. I mean, when we talk about black magic, we are talking about Satanism, necromancy, alchemy, witchcraft, the worship of Satan.
Welcome back to the channel, everybody. In today's video, we are going to be talking about what I like to call metaphysical mind control. More specifically, we're going to be looking at the phenomena of archetypal transference and the ramifications of this phenomena. We'll also be examining how the dark magicians and Kabbalists that work in Holyweird and the entertainment industry use this phenomena to program and control the masses. Now, I will be primarily drawing from the ideas of Seven Bomar in this video, and I will leave his channel in the description for those interested in further research. So what is archetypal transference, you might be asking? Well, let me explain. As many of you may already know, Carl Jung, who is responsible for the elucidation of this phenomena, identified four major archetypes within the human psyche. Although he did concede that there could be infinitely more, these are the four he inferred by way of examining religion, dreams, art, and literature. These four archetypes go by the name of the persona, the shadow, the anima, or the animus, and the self. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to break this down quickly, go into a brief description of archetypal transference, and then we're going to get into the meat of the video, okay? Because there's a little bit of prerequisite stuff we need to go through. Right, so the persona. Now, according to Jung, the persona is how we present ourselves to the world. The word persona, etymologically, is derived from a Latin word that literally means mask. However, this etymological link is not to be confused with a literal mask, and it is best understood as representing all of the different social masks that we wear among various different groups and situations. It acts to shield the ego from negative images. According to Jung, the persona may appear in dreams and take various different forms. Now, over the course of development, children learn that they must behave in certain ways, right, in order to conform to societal expectations and norms. Consequently, the persona develops as a social mask that contains all of our primitive urges, impulses, and emotions that are considered not socially acceptable. So, essentially, the persona archetype allows people to adapt to the world around them and fit in with society and fit in with the way in which they're expected to live based on these societal norms. However, becoming too closely identified with this archetype can lead people to lose sight of their original self. And this is an idea that we're going to be circling back to a little later on in the video. Right, now we have the shadow. Now, according to Jung, the shadow is the archetype that consists of sex and life instincts. The shadow exists as part of the unconscious mind and is composed of repressed ideas, weaknesses, desires, instincts, and shortcomings. The shadow forms out of our attempt to adapt to cultural norms and expectations. It is this archetype that contains all of the things that are quote-unquote unacceptable, not only to society, but also to one's own personal moral compass and values. It might include things such as envy, greed, prejudice, hate, aggression. Jung also suggested, and I find this very interesting, that the shadow can appear in dreams or visions and can take many different forms, much like the persona, but he gives a little more when elucidating what form the shadow can take, because he said that it might appear as a snake, a monster, a demon, or a dragon, or some other dark, wild, exotic figure. And I just find that snake, demon, and dragon, I mean, we've spoke a lot about snakes and demons and dragons on this channel, you know, and that kind of sort of all points to one particular species. However, I digress. Typically, the shadow is often described as the side of the psyche representing wildness, chaos, and the unknown. These latent dispositions are present in all of us, Jung believed. although people sometimes deny this element of their own psyche and project it onto others.
So now we have the anima and the animus. The anima is a feminine image in the male psyche, and the animus is a male image in the female psyche. The anima animus represents the true self, rather than the image we present to others and serve as the primary source of communication with the collective unconscious. Jung believed that psychological changes as well as social influences contributed to the development of sex roles and gender identities. Jung suggested the influence of the animus and anima archetypes were also involved in this particular process. According to Jung, the animus represents the masculine aspect in women, while the anima represented the feminine aspect in men. These archetypal images are based upon both what is found in the collective and personal unconscious. The collective unconscious may contain notions about how women should behave, while personal experiences with wives, girlfriends and sisters and mothers contribute to the personal images of women. In many cultures, however, men and women are encouraged to adopt traditional and often rigid gender roles. Jung suggested that this discouragement of men exploring their feminine aspect and women exploring their masculine aspect served to undermine their psychological development. The combination of the anima and animus is known as the syzygy, or the divine couple. Now, the syzygy represents the completion, unification, and wholeness. This is an idea that we have already touched upon in previous videos when we discussed the nature of the divine androgen and the cult of Hermes. Right, so we have the persona, the shadow, the anima, animus, and the last one is, of course, the self. Now, the self is an archetype that represents the unified unconsciousness and consciousness of an individual. Jung often represents the self as a circle, square, or a mandala. Creating the self occurs through a process known as individuation, in which the various aspects of personality are integrated. Jung believed that disharmony between the unconscious and the conscious mind could lead to psychological problems. Bringing these conflicts into awareness and accommodating them in conscious awareness was an important part of this individuation process. Jung suggested that there are two different centers of personality. The first, the ego, makes up the center of consciousness, but it is the self that lies at the center of personality. Personality encompasses not only consciousness, but also the ego and the unconscious mind. And to help you with this concept, you can think of this by imagining a circle with a dot right in the center. The entire circle makes up the self, while the dot in the middle represents the ego. Now, as previously stated, Jung held the persona, the shadow, anima, animus, and the self to be the four main archetypes that can be identified in mankind through influence into art, literature, and dreams. Jung believed that the archetypes that came from these collective models are innate, universal, unlearned, and hereditary. Jung believed that these archetypes came from the collective unconscious. He suggested that these models are innate, universal, unlearned, and hereditary. Archetypes organize how we experience certain things. And this is a quote from Jung. All the most powerful ideas in history go back to archetypes. And he says that in The Structure of the Psyche. Another quote by Jung. This is particularly true of religious ideas, but the central concepts of science, philosophy, and ethics are no exception to this rule. In their present form, they are variants of archetypal ideas created by consciously applying and adapting these ideas to reality. Okay, I'm going to say that again. This is particularly true of religious ideas, but the central concepts of science, philosophy, and ethics are no exception to this rule. In their present form, they are variants of archetypal ideas created by consciously applying and adapting these ideas to reality. For it is the function of consciousness not only to recognize and assimilate the external world through the gateway of the senses, but to translate it into something palatable and visible within the reality of the world in front of us. Following this logic, Jung obviously rejected the idea of the tabula rasa, or the notion that the human mind is a blank slate at birth to be written on solely by experience. On the other hand, he believed that the human mind retains fundamental, unconscious, biological aspects of our ancestors. And these primordial images, as he initially dubbed them, serve as the basic foundation of how to be a human. He postulated that each archetype played a role in personality, but felt that most people were dominated by one specific archetype. According to Jung, the actual way in which an archetype is expressed or realized depends upon a number of factors, including an individual's cultural influences and uniquely personal experiences. Whilst Jung identified these four main archetypes that we've just discussed, he also suggested that there are a number of existing archetypes that were not static or fixed. Instead, many different archetypes may overlap or combine, creating new archetypes, such as the father, who's a stern, powerful authority figure, or the hero, who's a champion, defender, and a rescuer. He acknowledged that these four main archetypes that we just spoke about can intermingle and in turn give rise to 12 archetypal figures, also known as archetypal images. And this is where we're going to be getting into the meat of today's video. First of all, let's look at what these 12 archetypal images are that happen following the intermingling of the four main archetypes of consciousness. Okay, so these 12 archetypal figures are the ruler, the creator, the sage, the innocent, the explorer, the rebel, the hero, the wizard, the jester, the everyman, the lover, and the caregiver. And depending on which particular reference point you're looking at, the name of these 12 archetypal figures may change a little bit. However, the general character types are still present and are still there. It's just that under some schools of thought, they have different names, but it really makes no difference. These are the essential 12 archetypal figures that were put forward by Jung. Now, Jung theorized that humans use symbolism to more easily understand complex concepts. And this is something that we've discussed at length on this channel. And I've previously said to you guys before that symbols are inscribed expressions of vast states of thought. They unpack themselves in our subconscious mind. Consequently, there are forms or images of a collective nature which occur practically all over the earth as constituents of myths and at the same time as individual products of unconsciousness. These archetypes are essentially hardwired and imprinted into our psyche, and they also map directly onto the 12 constellations of Western astrology, as you can see here in this image. Now remember, this video is about archetypal transference. Now, transference is defined as the projection of unconscious contents. Following this logic, archetypal transference is best understood as the unconscious projection of archetypes that exist in the collective unconscious. Archetypal transference can be achieved through a variety of mediums. However, today we're going to be focusing on Hollywood and the role they play in this phenomenon. Now, every movie you've ever watched, and I'm talking about since the dawn of cinema, every movie you've ever watched has been filled with archetypes. Whether you are cognizant of it or not, it makes absolutely no difference. Since cinema began, people have returned to the same set of on-screen archetypes over and over again. So much so that I would go as far to say that roughly, give or take, there's about 7 or 8 movie characters in total. In every film that's ever been made in history, 7 or 8 characters. That's it. Thousands of movies, 8 characters. And I'm not the only person who feels like this. Now, this article on the screen gives a fantastic breakdown of the 7 main archetypes that we see in Hollywood. Notice there is 7 and not 12, like we just looked at with the archetypal figures of Jung. However, this is because some of the archetypes that we see in Hollywood are amalgamations of more than one Jungian archetype. Okay? So for example, the rogue archetype is one we see over and over again in Hollywood. And this is best described as good looking or magnetic, motivated broadly by self-interest and isn't someone you'd want to settle down with. He can be both charismatic and an anti-hero, a sexy villain, if you must, okay? Struggles to play someone sympathetic. These are all the characteristics of the archetype of the rogue. And when we think of people who have played these roles, you can think of people like Jack Nicholas, Michael Fassbender, any person that's played Bond, Leonardo DiCaprio. All of these characters qualify for the rogue archetype.
which would be a combination of Jung's hero, Jung's lover, and Jung's rebel. Right now, I'm going to run through the rest of these and link the article in the description because I need to move on, so I'm going to do this quite quick. So they said we have the girl next door, the killing machine, the sex bomb, the boy scout, the joker, and the perfect gent. According to the author of this article, these are the seven main archetypes which pretty much encapsulate the entirety of Hollywood. But it's imperative to remember that these seven archetypes here that we're repeatedly presented with in Hollywood are a byproduct of Jung's 12 archetypal figures, figures which he believes to be innate in our psychology. So without Jung's 12 archetypal figures, we wouldn't have these other seven archetypes or eight archetypes that we see in Hollywood. Okay, so now we have briefly covered Jung and Hollywood, let's just break down some words quickly. And this may seem a little all over the place and a little convoluted at first, but please stick with me because you know I tie everything in and I've never led you astray when it comes to this. There's a method to my madness, okay? So just listen. Let's decipher these words, okay? Hollywood produces films or movies. First of all, let's start with the word film. Now, this has a dual meaning. Obviously, the first definition would be something along the lines of a story or event recorded by a camera as a set of moving images and shown in a cinema or television. We all know this definition. However, another one is best defined as become or appear to become covered with a thin layer of something. And this is when we're talking about a film as in the sense of a layer, okay? So that's two definitions. Now, the word movie is obviously synonymous with the first definition of film that we just looked at. However, there is a more occulted meaning to this term, movie. Okay? Movie is the same as move. E. E represents energy. E is the fifth letter in the alphabet. Remember, five is fire, which is connected directly to Kundalini. And we've been over this in previous videos. So the term movie is really move E, which is really move energy. And this is one of the main reasons that movies were made, okay, to shift and siphon the Kundalini around your body, stirring emotions. It should also be noted that the same principle that we apply to movie can also be applied to the term emotion. The E represents energy. So emotion is really energy motion or energy in motion, which is what emotions are. Emotions are energy in motion. Get it? Very simple. And I'm sure you've all at some point in your life watched a movie that has, you know, produced a real, real emotional reaction for you. You know, for instance, when you see a poignant scene in a movie, you may get goosebumps, that ineffable feeling that you can't explain. And that is your Kundalini being moved ever so slightly around your body. Because remember, most people's Kundalini is trapped at the bottom of their spine and it stays there forever. However, there will be instances where it moves very slowly or very subtly. It's just that most of the time this Kundalini is moving, we're not doing it consciously. There's a dark magician or a Kabbalist moving it for us for nefarious reasons. Okay, right, so in these films or these movies, we have actors and actresses. These form the cast. Now again, this word has two definitions. The first being a group of people that act in a particular film. The second being the form in which a thing is constructed. Now I'm sure we're all familiar with cast iron molds and things of that nature. Casts are used when trying to shape or mold something. Okay? You follow me? Stay with me, because I promise this is all going to make sense in about 5 minutes. I'll tie it all together. So these people that make up the cast, what do we call them? We call them the stars, right? And they're represented by the five-pointed star, i.e. the Walk of Fame. Remember, the five-pointed star is also the pentagram, which is directly related to fire. Again, please watch my previous videos for an in-depth explanation of this connection. We've all been exposed to this image of the Vitruvian Man, which shows the humans as stars,
because we are all in fact stars. It's not just the celebrities. They've just had their powers hijacked by Kabbalists, but we are all stars. We just choose to worship the ones that they tell us to, and in turn hand over our power to them, which in turn gets sucked up by the Kabbalists behind closed doors and used for all manner of different things. So we call these celebrities stars. Of course, the second meaning of this would be the collective of planetary bodies in the sky, which I mentioned earlier, which tied directly into Jung's 12 archetypes. Now, the phrase movie set is best defined as the enclosure in which a film scene is shot, including scenery and props. With that being said, the word set is also the name of the central antagonist in Egyptian mythology. Set, for all intents and purposes, is the god of disorder, chaos and storms. Note that Baal is also known as the god of storms in the Akkadian pantheon. He was also known as the god of the underworld. As time passed, Set essentially became known as the Egyptian god of evil and is typically compared with Satan. We all know the people that run the show behind closed doors practice ancient Egyptian rites. Hence the pyramid on the All Sinai, hence all the Egyptian iconography and music videos and the pyramids, and you know, I don't have to break this down to you, they're pretty balls deep in the Egypt stuff. Even the Oscar statue is literally modelled on Ptah. Breaking down this phrase and applying the knowledge that I've already told you, movie set becomes move energy set. So now you don't need to wonder who's responsible for those emotional reactions that you're having when your kundalini is moving around your body. It's all in the name. Move energy set. Movie set. You know who's doing it. Right, last but not least, what are these films stored on? Stored on a reel, of course, right? A reel. A movie reel. We have two definitions for the word reel. One is in what a movie or film is stored on, and the second is what we define to be quote-unquote true, right? Reel and reel. Now let me bring this all together. When we watch a movie or a film, whether we like it or not, archetypal transference takes place. This is to say that the archetypes that are being presented in whatever we are watching are subconsciously being projected onto our subconscious mind. And what these archetypes do is basically attach themselves to us. This is because, like I said, they are amalgamations of innate character traits that can be found in all humans, in every human psyche. So we're drawn to them naturally through astrological resonance. And I'm sure we've all watched films and we've been gravitated towards these archetypes, gravitated towards characters. We all have a favourite character out here. Archetypal transference takes this one step further, though. We do not only gravitate towards these characters, we literally become them once the transference has taken place. And children are the most susceptible to this phenomenon because their imaginative powers are still so rich and untarnished. I remember when I was a kid, I was literally obsessed with Power Rangers, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and I really thought I was the Red Ranger for a good, you know, year or two. You couldn't tell me nothing. If you ask me, I'm the Red Ranger, man. Which would be, what, a hero archetype, okay? And as I got older, I noted that I gravitated more towards the rogue type, anti-hero characters. And this is a natural evolution that will happen with all of us, depending on which movies we watch and which circumstances we grow up in. Most little girls nowadays will find themselves identifying with a princess archetype. If you have younger children, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about here. But what's really going on at a metaphysical level here when this transference takes place? Like I said, these archetypes attach to us through transference. But this transference, when it happens, it creates a film or a layer which essentially envelops your original self. And the more films that you watch, the more films that are created over your original self, the more archetypes become attached and beamed into your subconscious mind, and the more films attached to you. Every archetype is a film that covers your original self. The movie will move the energy in your body and create a subconscious layer over your original self. And these films or layers, like I said, are of course the different archetypes. We identify with the stars in the cast. Remember, we're all stars, and a cast is used to mold. In other words, the cast, aka the actors and the actresses, are used to mold us in their image. And of course, our mind is tricked into believing that these films are real, the movie real. This is why our bodies react to these events in films like it's actually happening to us. How many times have you heard somebody say, oh, it's just a film, it's not real, when you're crying your eyes out watching John Q? You don't want to hear that at the minute because you're emotively connecting to this film. Our subconscious mind cannot differentiate between what is real and what is not real, and that is how this transference occurs. Now, I hope this makes sense to you. Let's do a little recap, because I know what I just said is a lot and you may be confused. So let's go over it. Jung identified 12 archetypes intrinsic to human psychology that exist in the collective consciousness, which he inferred through observation and investigation into culture, art and dreams. These 12 archetypes can be paralleled with the 12 signs of the zodiac that we find in Western astrology today. Now, there is a phenomenon known as archetypal transference, whereby we see the unconscious projection of these archetypes that exist in the collective unconsciousness. This projection is done onto us through various formats, the main one being through Hollywood and the film and movie industry. Now, when these archetypes are projected onto us, we gravitate towards them by means of astrological resonance, and it creates a layer or a film over the original self. We then assimilate our own sense of selfhood with these characters, and the two become conflated. Okay, to put it differently, we become programmed. Now, these archetypes and characters that we see in these films are programs, and these programs worm their way into our subconscious mind and unfold themselves. Each and every person is assuming a different role, a different character, and this is set up from an early age because of the school system. And the school system subconsciously places all of these archetypes in the mind of a child through their stories and their nursery rhymes. You know, there's a reason why all children sing the same nursery rhymes, you know, and it's because the schooling system that we know today sets up all these characters inside the curriculum, which would serve as triggers to the characters that would be assigned to you through the movies later on in life. Yeah, when you take on that character, which you do subconsciously, another person will take on another character. And then the film or the movie reel will begin to literally unwind in your subconscious and play out in reality. This is how Hollywood program us. Again, this is supported by the words. As previously stated, when we watch these films, a film is produced over our original self. We identify to the stars, which are both the celebrities and the zodiac. These stars are then used in a cast to mold us and our subconscious mind. This is why films are on a reel, because the whole point of modern cinema is to distort the notion of what is real. All of this is done on set, which, as we've discussed, takes us back to the Cometan Pantheon. Now, I'm not talking me and you specifically, I'm talking as a collective. Humanity, we idolize these stars, but in doing that, we become idol ourselves and get left in a state of stasis, existing through the lens of whatever program is running through your mind, or whatever disc is currently spinning in your mind. They take over your will with their will. Remember, the will is a disc. We've got all of these discs or wheels spinning in our brain. These hits are right on the money. A film attacks the mind and makes us idle, because our subconscious is literally infiltrated by the real. I'll say that again. A film attacks the mind and makes us idle, because our subconscious is infiltrated by the real. With all that being said, Hollywood is simply the land of archetypes, a bunch of characters playing roles. I mean, why do you think films are used as a thematic base for trauma-based mind control? Right, so now we've ascertained what Hollywood are really doing with their films, we have to ask why, and what are the ramifications of this transference? Well, the main one is clearly that it leaves us deeply programmed and open to subversion
and subconscious suggestion. You need to remember that Hollywood was made by Crowley. Crowley was every bit a dark magician. Now we have these Kabbalists masquerading as producers and animators, and their primary goal is to change the way you think. And as long as you're running off one of their scripts, they have you in light code lockdown because you are so far removed from your original self. Some people out here have watched over 200 films, 300 films. Do you know how many layers you've got? Do you know how many films you've got over your original self? Do you know how much work you have to do on deprogramming yourself away from those archetypes that you've gravitated towards over the 30 or 20 years, or, you know, maybe even 10 years? Maybe you're a film buff. I mean, I'm not really a big film guy. I kind of stopped watching films when I was about 14, 15. You know, I can't tell you the last time I went to the cinema. And like I said, these films play themselves out in your subconscious mind. So you may wake up one day and think you're making decisions that you want, but you're literally living in a movie. Your vision has been distorted by the film. Your lens has been muddied. And now your actions and sense of self follow suit. That film reel unravels in your mind and projects itself into reality. And with every new film that you watch, the film just gets thicker and thicker. Layers and layers get added onto the point where you don't even know who you really are anymore. All you have are programs, like I said, or a bunch of discs spinning in your subconscious mind. Because remember, information is stored on a disc in this reality. And all of those discs are spinning and playing out at the same time in your subconscious mind, leaving you in a state of complete confusion. And this goes even deeper, because when you realize that they made all of these archetypes, characters or programs, for lack of a better term, you slowly start to realize that they know how to control them. So that means they know how to control you. They know what the triggers are for each program, so they know how to trigger you. So let's say, for instance, they want to stir up a particular archetype on a certain day of the week for whatever ritualistic purpose. All they would have to do is flood the media with information that they know will trigger a certain archetype. You follow me? Essentially, what I'm saying here is that they can turn your programming on and off without you even knowing you've been programmed while you're sitting there watching that Black Mirror. Yeah, it's all phantasmagoria. Deception is their game, so turn that TV off. Stop willingly putting yourself in a cast to be molded by these celebrities and their allegiance to set. Don't let these movies move your energy around your body in a way that creates films over your original self. All because your mind is confusing what's on the real for what's real. Remember, these so-called celebrities or stars or fallen angels, whatever you want to call them, they've all made pacts with nefarious entities to be where they are. There are energy exchanges going on that you have no idea about, yet you're their source. They're sucking from you, yeah? There's a reason they walk down the red carpet that symbolizes the blood of the Goyim, or the blood of the uninitiated. That's me and you to them, yeah? Unplug yourself and stop being a battery and a source of power for these dark magicians to suck from you through these stars. Unplug yourself.